right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now we are switching our focus over to the energy sector, more specifically oil and natural gas, as we're chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group, and we chat with Dan pretty much every month to get an update on what's happening in the energy sector. And I'm glad we waited for this week because there's been quite a big change in the pricing of oil. Look, a lot driven by geopolitics, this Israel-Iran conflict. But when we were chatting with Dan over the last couple months in April and May, we were talking about that breakdown in the oil price below, let's just call it $65 a barrel, the trading range it had been in for a couple years. Recently, just in the last couple weeks, or maybe only a week, the price has recovered back up as we're recording this into the 70s, right back in that trading range. But again, a lot of that seeming to be driven by the Israel-Iran conflict. So Dan, what do you take away from this recent price move, geopolitics driven, but now it at least being back in the 70s?
Well, really, I mean, if you did told me a year ago that Russia and Iran, two of the top five oil exporters in the world, would be involved in shooting wars, serious shooting wars. And I would have thought oil would be 100, 120 or something. I'm surprised that with this much political risk on two countries that are big oil producers. But anyway, there's, you know, it's up about $12, $15 a barrel since we last talked. Today, we're recording this on Wednesday. It started the day close to 76, and then in the morning it dropped down like $2, got negative, and then the storage report came out that showed a larger than expected draw from U.S. crude oil storage, like 11 million barrels. I mean, the highest estimate I saw was 6 million barrels, and the price just started coming back. So now it's back in the green. I'm looking at the screen. It's like 75.19, up 35 cents on the day, and it had been up over $3 the day before. So at this point, the geopolitical risks, where they stand in Israel and Iran, is about a $15 a barrel, you know, premium, risk premium, because yesterday there was an accident near the Strait of Hormuz, the entrance to the Persian Gulf, where about 20% of the world's oil goes through every day, exported out of that region in the Middle East. And that narrow channels there, only like 2 miles wide. And just outside of it, they were outside the Persian Gulf, just about a couple of miles, and their GPS systems got all messed up by the jamming that Israel was doing, electronic jamming, and they were both, you know, trying to jam each other and messed up the GPS in the whole area. And the ships were all having to go manual, and it was in the middle of the night, and one ship ran into another ship, and it, you know, the friction of the two metals against each other started a fire, and the one ship was totally engulfed in flames. And so I think a lot of the ships are going to stay away from the region, which will eventually impact, you know, oil supply on the global market.
Well, and just to that point, Dan, there's also been a lot of friction between Israel and Iran about who has the shipping agency in those sea lanes in the Strait of Hormuz. So if there was something done to that area, if there was a bunch of ships that clogged it up because they started sinking ships with missiles, or if they just started getting frisky in that area, what do you think that would mean to the oil price compared to the premium that's already in place now? Would it go up into the 80s and 90s, or would it be a short-term effect? And what options do people have to ship outside of the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, they don't have much because there's limited pipeline access out of there. And, well, first of all, I think the chances of them doing that is slim and none, because they know for sure immediately, not only just the Air Force, which is total control of the skies now, we have two aircraft carriers within range. We have a big Air Force base there real close. I know we have, you know, fighters and stuff in the air all the time. First of all, we totally wipe out their shore bases. We would wipe out the Iranian Navy within 24 hours. Their Navy is gunboats. And they're going up. They're not going up against our ships. They'd be going up against our fighter jets. And those fighter jets will wipe out every one of those gunboats within hours. So they know it will be all over. So I can't even imagine they'd even try to do it. But, you know, desperate people do desperate crap. I don't know. And they might decide to sink a few tankers. And if they sunk them right in the shallowest part of the Strait of Hormuz, it could shut it down for a while. And just, even if it was shut down for, weeks, a few weeks, it would really have a major impact on the global oil supply, because it literally about 20% of the world's oil passes through that strait every day. So it'd be a big deal.
Dan, I want to follow up on something you said that with Israel and Iran in a shooting war, a missile war, you would have said a couple of years ago that oil would be back in the triple digits. Does that just show that either it's a more balanced market or that the U.S. has taken a reasonable market share here, that some of these wars, some of the Middle East tensions are less impactful in this market? And quite frankly, with prices where companies can still make money but not sky high, this is just a more level market where we're at.
Yeah, well, right now, with the quota increases that OPEC Plus has announced, the only country that really has significant additional surplus that they could bring on quickly if the strait was, and then I don't know how they'd get it out because they got to get it out through the Persian Gulf. But the only country that really has a lot of spare capacity is Saudi Arabia now. And at most quickly, within days, they might be able to bring on 500,000 barrels a day. But all the major countries have storage. Now, believe it or not, the U.S. crude oil storage is 10% below normal for this time of year. That alone is kind of a big deal. That alone tells me there's no glut of oil anywhere. I think there's other forces. Obviously, the Wall Street gang wants inflation to stay down because they want low interest rates. So they're constantly trying to talk down the price of oil. And we still have got the fear of the tariffs, which is really a fear of recession, lowering demand. So you got that's kind of the other side of this. And there's just a lot of uncertainty right now, but obviously this is a big uncertainty on supply. And I mean, they're serious. I think Israel is not going to quit until they have regime change there. And they believe if they can, take down this current government in Iran, 75% of the people hate them anyway. So they would like to overthrow the government. And maybe if you got a stable Iran, it would be wonderful for the Middle East if Iran was not a global sponsor of terrorists and had all these proxies starting wars all over the place. It would be great. The whole Middle East would benefit from it. I mean, it's a rich nation. It's the same situation you have down in Venezuela. You have countries that have tremendous oil wealth, and if they didn't spend it on stupid stuff, they would be great, economies, and they would have some of the highest standard of living on earth. So it'd be great for that. Great if that happens, I think. We'll see.
Well, Dan, let's just say that cooler heads prevail, and in a week or two, there's a ceasefire and there's peace in the area. That may be a stretch for some people mentally, but let's just say it happens. What does that do to the oil price then? How much would it drop, and would we be in danger of this kind of scenario that we had just a month ago?
Yeah, I mean, they say they're never giving up, they're never going to surrender. If that is their stance, this isn't going to end quickly. They may destroy their Air Force, they may destroy the nuclear enrichment sites, but totally defeating them. I mean, here's the problem that Iran has. So Iran has literally today no air force at all. It cannot control its airspace. Number two, it has a navy that's kind of a joke, a bunch of just gunboats. But they do have a big army. But for that army to get all the way across Iraq into Israel is almost impossible without air support. So their entire army, all their tanks they have are kind of worthless because they can't get to Israel. But then Israel can't really get to them either. So unless it becomes a full-blown ground war with the US, I don't know how you totally defeat Iran if they just want to keep, if they want to fight to the death, it's going to take a long time.
Well, I guess we'll see where that geopolitical issue goes. But hey, still oil, I think it needs to tack on some more gains here, because this is unfortunately a bullish story for oil. And right now it's still just kind of in the middle of this trading range that it's been in for the last few
Yeah,
years.
but
So.
I mean, they're all the companies that I follow, upstream companies are very profitable at 75. In fact, they're all free cash flow positive. Every single upstream company it's our model portfolios is free cash flow positive at $65 oil, because that's what I'm using in my forecast for the second half of this year.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Yeah, these companies can still be profitable, but
Oh,
fact of the
yeah.
matter is, higher oil prices, then that can really move the stock prices higher because stock prices, as much as they've recovered, they're not at all-time highs, but neither is the oil price. Let's quickly move over to the natural gas sector then, because natural gas has also been doing okay, closing in on $4 right now as we're recording this. You brought up that LNG Canada is coming online. What sort of impacts will we see there, and what do you foresee for the natural gas market?
Well, I mean, the Canadian national gas market and the U.S. gas market is like totally different. I mean, you still got, because of the wildfires up there, took some demand offline. I think AECO gas is like below a dollar right now. But LNG Canada is really going to help. Here, the oil price just updated and it's now down 50 cents. Who knows? I mean, it's just going all over. And, but, I think gas prices are definitely going to come back because we've had a lot of LNG export facilities offline for maintenance for a while. They're coming back online. The weather forecast becoming very, very bullish. Our January, February, and the whole eastern part of the country is supposed to be warmer than normal, and they're going to max out. Every gas-fired power plant is going to be running at full capacity for in a while. And if we have a hot July and August, we've had a pretty mild May and June, so the storage builds have been bigger than normal, and we've built up. But the forecasts I'm seeing now are those storage builds are going to get much smaller within a couple of weeks. When we start reporting July, those storage are going to go below the 5-year average, which will then, the differential between where we are and the 5-year average will start to shrink again. And if it really gets hot and it really gets back to the 5-year average, the demand for U.S. gas is 5 or 6 BCF a day higher than it was last year. So multiply that by the number of days in the winter, and then you need, 120 or something in the 4 months of the winter months. Then you need that times 5 BCF more gas really in storage to safely make it through the winter. So comparing the gas in storage at a 5-year average is really very, very misleading. We're going to need more gas in storage when the winter begins than we had in storage last year. And right now we're over 200 BCF below where we were last year in storage at the same time. So it doesn't, there's almost no way that meets it. So that's why the EIA, every week now, every month when their monthly report comes out, EIA for the last 3 or 4 months has raised their natural gas price forecast for 2026 every month. And today, their official gas price forecast is $4.90 per MMBTU US. Well, that would equate in Canadian dollars to like $6 gas. Now, I don't think we get there, but I think once LNG Canada's online for a while, I think you could get up to $3.54 Canadian gas price. And I'm telling you, the Canadian companies, compared to last year, they would love that. So it's, and that's the thing to remember. Okay, let's say we're at $65 to $70, and that's the price range we end up settling in if this war ever ends over there. Then the higher natural gas price offsets most of the decline in the oil price. And so you're really looking at right now that the second half of this year is going to be comparable in financial profits to what it was last year. And a lot of these companies are trading at a big discount to where they were last year. But I think they're financially, they're really in better shape.
Well, Dan, just to that point, if you're looking at companies that are really heavily weighted to oil versus companies heavily weighted to gas, I know there's some that have a nice mix and they would do fine if the nat gas prices offset some of the lower oil. But would you be more tempted to, if you had to pick one, I know you like to be in all of it, but if you had to pick one, would you be more interested in the nat gas companies over the oil companies? And would you feel differently about U.S. nat gas companies and oil companies versus Canadian nat gas and oil
Well,
companies?
really, because the war is not really affecting nat gas that much. It's more the weather and storage builds and all that, because the Canadian and U.S. gas markets are not really affected that much by the international prices, which are much, much higher, like $13 an MCF. And so it's been very bullish already. And a lot of those gas companies like Antero Resources, EQT, Range, whatever, they've already been priced up. Now, there's a few of them that I think Aera, Ovintiv, which was Encana that changed its name to Ovintiv, they've got a lot of gas production, and those stocks are, still pretty low. I don't really think people are looking at that much at those. And that's the ones I think are really good. And you just want to look at their balance sheet. They don't have any, not much debt problems or anything. A lot of the balance sheets are in really good shape. And they're, like I said, they're profitable. They're free cash flow positive. Their bottom are paying nice dividends. So the upstream subsector is really in much better shape than when you look at where some of the stock prices are.
Well, Dan, I still want to circle back to Canadian gassers versus U.S. gassers because you didn't really weigh in on it yet. There has not been the same robust picture, like you pointed out, for some of the U.S. gassers compared to the Canadians. How are you looking at those? Are they a contrarian play here?
Well, they are contrarian play because I think the wildfires are going to get contained at some point. The LNG Canada will have an impact up there, and I do expect the ones that I follow up there, their gas prices weren't all that bad. The one that looks good up there to me is Peyto, PEY.TO, and it sells a lot of its gas into contracts with contracts into the U.S. So it reported really good gas prices for the first quarter. In play oil will do well if gas prices rebound, that's for sure.
What about something like Birchcliff, Dan? That's a pure gas play in Canada, and they haven't really responded to the prices because they haven't had the same prices as the US.
Yeah. I don't follow that particular one. Whitecap, the one that merged with Veren, it looks good and it pays a really nice dividend, by the way, about 8%, I think. And it's on my to-do list to build a model on that one because I was following Veren. Veren was one of my top picks and they bought it. So,
Are you seeing any leadership in these stocks in terms of are the big guys still leading? Are they holding their gains? Clearly, the juniors, those are still kind of struggling, but are the big guys, I guess, showing any leadership in your eyes?
well, our just in the last couple, last week, which there had only been one day of war. Last week, our Sweet 16 gained 6.7% on that one day. We're now 9 out of the 16 companies are in the green.
Have they held those gains too, then, Dan? Because one day that's great, but if it's coming off low levels, that doesn't mean as much.
Yeah, the gas companies are, are pretty much holding around, like EQT's up 23.5%, Antero up 18, 19%, Range up 15%. Coterra's finally in the green. They're just 5% up. That's one I'd recommend. If anybody's wanting to do it, because they're about 70% of their production is natural gas, and they've been in the red like all year, even though the other gases have gone up. Devon looks really good to me. It's another one that's got produces a lot of gas and extremely strong financial position. Now, the ones that are holding us back is it's like Crescent Energy, which looks really good to me. In fact, I got a call from a guy that manages a lot of money, and Crescent Energy was his number one pick. And as of Friday, it was down 33% year to date. And it's in South Texas, which has a lot of pipeline access to the Gulf Coast, where they can get their gas down to those big LNG export facilities at Corpus Christi. And, there's several more, Freeport, Cheniere's down there, and they export a lot of gas, and they're going to need a lot of gas supply. This just today, I heard that Mitsubishi has made an $8 billion offer to a private company, Atheron, which is a big Haynesville gas producer. But man, I wouldn't have thought it was worth $8 billion. But Mitsubishi is a big LNG exporter themselves, so they're doing it to get gas supply. So that market's gonna really heat up. I think with what's going on with the gas. Oh, by the way, Israel did bomb the largest gas field in the world. Is called the South Par field, and it is a joint venture between Qatar and Iran, and Israel bombed it, and it shut down about 12 million cubic meters, not MCF, not cubic feet, but cubic meters of gas was shut in, and that is a big deal. And the Europe and Asian LNG gas prices are up a dollar, dollar and a half already just since that happened. That was only like 2 days ago. Now, they have not bombed any of the oil export facilities yet, and probably because Trump's telling them, hey, don't bomb that stuff because you will send oil prices through the roof if you bomb Iran's oil export facilities. But they bombed some refineries, they've bombed some storage locations of fuel. So it's impacting petroleum supplies. So.
Dan, I'm curious what you're seeing then. I'm hearing all these bullish comments out of you in terms of where the oil price could go, where the natural gas price could go, how these companies are still making money. And they are showing some strength on the charts, but not that sort of, I guess, major bullish leg that we saw back a few years ago when everything just screamed higher and it seemed like other investors were rushing into the sector. It almost feels like it's still the oil and gas investors playing amongst themselves with a spattering of other investors. So in terms of the stocks that are doing well, what are their characteristics? Are they showing growth? Are their dividend yields higher? Are their share buybacks higher? Is it something else? What is separating the good stocks from the rest of the sector?
Well, you look at Surge Energy, and they reported better than expected results for the first quarter. And I think the stock's up like 27% or something since the first quarter at $6.46. They pay a nice dividend, that, and they set three debt repayment goals, and they've met two out of the three. And if oil will just stay elevated for a while, that'll accelerate when they meet their final debt level. And the dividend yield today is 8.5%. They're buying back shares, and so when they reach their final debt payoff level, they've already promised the market they're going to increase dividends again, and they're going to expand their stock buyback. And it's, you know, 23,000 BOE a day. It's not a really tiny company, and they are reporting, they're telling me that they've got some really good well results. They're in the Sparky zone, and they have an area called Hope Valley. And they're getting really good results there. That's where they're drilling those wells. And then they have multiple laterals coming out of the bottom of the vertical section. So they have, you drill straight down and then you go out sideways, maybe a half mile in, think of it as a wheel, you know, and they're just open hole horizontals. And that technique is getting some really good well results. And, you know, they're not big frack jobs or anything. And they're relatively cheap wells that come on 400 or 500 barrels a day kind of thing. And pay out really quickly. It's $75 oil. They probably pay out in like 6 months. So that one looks good. Hemisphere is a pure oil play. So the gas price being down here recently in Canada doesn't hurt them at all. They're working on that big. They got another polymer flood going. If that's successful, that would be a big upside for that one. And it pays a really nice dividend too. They're both dividend payers. In play oil is a big dividend player. Surge pays dividends monthly. So does InPlay pays dividends monthly. Anyway, you know, one, I sent you a note on, if you got time to talk about Rock Resources, they're hosting a luncheon for us in Houston tomorrow. And they've got a new president. The former founder president is still going to be the chairman, but he's not going to be involved day to day as much. So they made the other guy president. Bryden Wright is going to be the speaker. And they did something. I've been following this company since they kind of formed during the pandemic, first year of the pandemic. And they went out and got like an $80 million loan, bought some properties in distressed areas, like people that had to sell. And then, you know, they produced those areas for a while. But then when the oil price bounced back to $40, $50 within a year, they were able to sell a third of what they bought and pay off almost the entire debt. And here just a few weeks ago, they monetized their oil hedges at the absolutely perfect time, almost at the absolute bottom of the oil price. They monetized their hedges for like $6 or $7 million, and they paid off 100% of their interest-bearing debt. They're basically debt-free, and now they're going to be kicking off their summer drilling program. It's just getting started right now, and they're just going to drill by 6 or 8 wells. They are totally committed to live within cash flow. And they should, you know, have steady production growth, and it's a pretty decent looking company.
Well, we've sure heard a lot about Rock Resources over the last few years, and unfortunately, it just hasn't done very well in the last couple of years. So
yeah, and nobody really knows about them. It's like nobody knows the story. You can't.
Well, people seem to know it in 2020 through 2022, and then they have turned their back on it. But maybe things are changing for Rock. But hey, Dan. Great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time with us on this weekend show. I hope all of you listening have enjoyed this weekend show. Be sure to keep in touch with Shad and I through email, and be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and our YouTube channel. All you have to do is search The KE Report. Please subscribe on your podcast player. Leave us comments and leave us reviews. It does help to get the word out on this show is, hey, this is a bull market for a lot of commodities. We cover a lot of resource companies, and now's the time to be paying attention. So everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. We hope you all have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.